Hey everybody, so it's Tay Perkins and we are here in Houston, Texas for AfroTech this week, and we are going to bring you the third episode of our Gaming Issue podcast. And here with me today is
David Echeverria, man. Nice to be here.
All right. So we have a few topics for today. So we are here, like I said, we are here at AfroTech. So there's a few things that, of course, we want to discuss, and everything that is gaming nowadays happens here in Texas. Like, we got NVIDIA right here. They're one of the biggest semiconductors and microchip producers here. And every game you see nowadays has NVIDIA. You're going to see that NVIDIA logo. But there's a few things that we want to talk about, because we had seen some interesting comments from Ubisoft, the gaming developer. Mm-hmm. So they recently said that the issue with, I don't know if you guys know, Ubisoft has been releasing a very bad string of games, starting with the latest Far Cry, and then going all the way from Avatar, Pandora, to Star Wars Outlaws.
Yeah, it's been pretty much over six at this point, so yeah.
And none of this, I won't even bring up the Assassin's Creed, because I can't even remember the last one that came out, but I know it wasn't the best. I think it was Valhalla, and everybody felt screwed with that one, because and I remember I played it, and I couldn't even activate the DLC after buying the expansion pass. it just froze up, completely destroyed my data. But Ubisoft released a statement saying that the issue isn't with our games as a developer. The issue is actually with the consumer. Consumers are demanding too much.
Too much. You know, it sounds a lot like Escaping Accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to be a huge fan of theirs. And still, you know, when it comes to thinking about the games that I used to love, I'm still a childhood fan. You know, you mentioned the Assassin's Creed series. Yeah. That's one of the first games I really fell in love with. You know, and seeing the level of depth that they used to have. Now, I haven't played the last couple. Mm-hmm. Ironically enough, I was actually really looking forward to Assassin's Creed Shadows. That was supposed to be coming out this fall. Mm-hmm. And I think that just kind of really encapsulates, like, what their issue is, which is a lack of accountability. The lack of real depth in their games nowadays. I mean, you talk about the Star Wars Outlaws. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. I did not purchase that game because it really missed the mark, I think, on a number of ways. One, the marketing of it, I think they were a little too comfortable and thinking that folks are going to flock to that game just because it's a Star Wars title. But the reality is that people haven't flocked to Star Wars games in a long time.
Yeah.
So really, like, I think that that's where their issue lies. The idea that it's the consumers that's the issue, that is not the case in any other industry. So why does it have to be the case in the gaming industry? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we're buying what we want to see. I think one of the reasons, I think we've seen a lot of folks start to go towards the PC route because of the indie game development that happens in that space versus the console industry that we're essentially hogtied by the developers themselves. That, again, escape accountability, aren't really investing in their game development. You know, one of the things that I know we've discussed previously, like, even just the quality of the production across the whole game. So you look at the sound production and the music that's in the games. All the Halo anniversaries have come up, so I've been seeing a lot of the clips on Twitter, and the nostalgia that's still there. You look at the level of depth in the audio and the sounds of that game, that's what brings back the memories of being in the basement of my neighbors growing up and hearing the opera, the level of artistry in the music. Yeah. So, like, I think you can see the way that games used to be developed and you see them now. And no, Ubisoft, you're not about to say that we're the issue. And that you're not gonna gaslight us into thinking that we're the problem and you aren't. So.
That's what it is. It's complete gaslighting. And there used to be a time when the customer was always right. Mm. And now Ubisoft is saying, no, the customer isn't right. The demand is, and I get it. Nowadays we're in a time and age where they can't produce a game fast enough to save us, because we used to, you know, the advent of cell phones and everything has made things look, I need to be constantly entertained, I need to constantly scroll, and that has made it so that now these game developers, they can't turn out games as fast, because our demand is higher, but also technology isn't what it used to be back when we were kids in the early 2000s, where it was like, oh, you had to get all these things together. You actually had to go find people. And yes, you had to get composers. You had to sit in the studio and compose things. And I feel like that's kind of why the music quality was so good, because you had to find those people. Mm-hmm. And now people are like, well, I don't got to find those people anymore. I can use AI. I can have a whole AI-generated soundtrack. And I get, you know, wanting to utilize AI, but AI is great, don't get me wrong. But we also shouldn't find ourselves becoming reliant on AI, because at that point, we will start losing some of the skills that we had to maintain in order to make things within this industry function. Mm-hmm. And but Ubisoft is on a downhill slope. And when you notice people start to spiral, they always start blaming the people closest to them. They always start blaming the consumers, the people that purchase. They always start saying, no, it's you guys. And we talked about it in our first episode. We said Ubisoft is going to be one of the things that decline. And eventually we're going to find it so that Ubisoft either gets eaten up by, now at this point, bigger sharks, because Ubisoft used to be the biggest shark in the water, but they're losing. They're not eating because no one is feeding into it anymore. We're not going to sit here and be blamed because you guys said, oh, you know, we're going to do a whole remastering of Assassin's Creed, and we're going to make it more closer to an RPG instead of what it used to be. And what it used to be, it was its own thing. Mm-hmm. You couldn't play another game like Assassin's Creed. You had a mission. It was me against the Templars.
Yeah, and you also learned history, and like there was relevance to things that people were interested in. Mm-hmm. You know, like that was their niche, was like appealing to young people and people in general. Because I think it transcended age groups too in a lot of ways because of that piece. And yeah, it was different.
I remember going to school and I was like, guys, I used to tell people, I said, no, the Templar Order, and they would immediately think, like, they would think to Assassin's Creed, but the Templar Order was a real thing in history. So yeah. People would be, but that's how major Assassin's Creed was. People wouldn't even know that the real history was there. They'd go off what they played in Assassin's Creed. But nowadays we're seeing that they started making up their own history, per se. They were like, well, you know, we're going to get really weird with it. And instead of everybody being assassins, I think for the last two titles, Valhalla and then the one where they made us Odyssey.
And Origins, I think was like the other one.
Yeah, they were basically gods within the pantheon that was related to the game, or demigods. Yeah. And I was like, okay, guys.
Yeah, I think I sent you a thread the other day that talked about games that stood the test of time over the past 10 plus years, you know. And you know, speaking of Assassin's Creed, I think the first one on the thread was Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which is a controversial game in the Assassin's Creed universe, especially by Assassin's Creed fans. I think that was kind of the tilting point of them kind of losing the appeal that they had. Now, I'm a huge fan of Black Flag. I think they had the right mix in that point. You know, main character, he wasn't necessarily an assassin, but they turned him into one. But more than anything, the world that the game was in was dynamic. It was new. It was fresh. It was much better than the one they had. Oh, personally, I didn't like the Assassin's Creed that was held in the Americas.
Was it 3?
I think it was 3. Yeah. I didn't like that one in my opinion. That just was me. But I really think that game was the tilting point. But the way, looking at that thread, there were games, you know, Assassin's Creed Black Flag was there. Mm-hmm. Just Cause 2, if folks have played that. Skyrim, of course. A lot of games that folks are going back to. And we'll look at the whole list here in a second. But that, again, it's evidence that it's not the consumer, it's the developers now. Because we are going back to old games. That's one of the things I've done a lot. Perhaps it's some nostalgia, but it's also because of the story and the depth in them. They're replayable. I've not had a replayable game in a long time. I felt like, okay, I want to play the campaign over and over again. And even when you even look at like the Call of Duty games back in the 2010s, the Modern Warfare 2s, like for me, I actually enjoyed playing the offline story modes, which have not been, again, haven't been the case in a long time, especially for the FPS games. I think that thread was actual evidence, and included a lot of Ubisoft games, was evidence that, like, hey, again, stop blaming us, be accountable, and reflect on what did work in the past and why isn't stuff working now.
Yeah. And that's you made a critical point. So with these games that came out 10 years ago, back in the day, when games came out, they, you knew that you were going to immediately like get the successor within 1 to 2 years. You knew you were getting that sequel if the game was good. And not only did they make a replayable game and give you a sequel in a timely manner, it was always going to be another replayable game. And nowadays, they don't do that. That's not reciprocated. What they do is they give you a game that is technically kind of unfinished and has you wanting a sequel, but then they always like dangle it over you and be like, it'll be out in the next 5 years, it'll be out in the next 10 years. And the game that they give you isn't replayable. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what am I going to do until that time?
And it doesn't buy them time, which is why they feel rushed. I think you also, and you touched on earlier with the AI point, also the way they're hiring and like mm-hmm. the labor movement within the gaming industry is an important aspect of this, because they aren't retaining the talent, but they're also, it's also purposeful. They're releasing mm-hmm. talent very quickly after they don't need, quote unquote, don't need them. And so also the actual workers and the developers, artists all feel rushed as well, because they don't have a guarantee of 4 years of employment that can go past the game. Mm-hmm. So that's also why the thread that used to occur from game to game, the Fable series, for example, is something I think about. I think it is a very continual progression from game to game. Now, we did see a break where you can tell, like, okay, like, obviously they took many years off, but there's still a thread of the story, the art, and then, yeah, it moved along with the technology and everything as well, and the graphics. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, that's also, I replayed Fable 3, I think, like 2 or 3 months ago. And yeah, it's a quicker game, you know, mm-hmm. it doesn't, but it's enjoyable. Like, and there also, and there was enough there that you could also, you know, kind of like Skyrim, like you don't have to stay on the main story all the time, but you can still have fun and play around, you know?
And even when you beat the game, there was always more to go back to. And you mentioned Skyrim. So speaking on Skyrim, that's why Bethesda is not in any hurry. Bethesda delivered us a game that is standing the testaments of time. And they don't even have to really touch on it too much anymore. They recently just dropped one of their creation kit DLCs, where they brought it so that they brought the vampire clans from Morrowind into mm-hmm. Skyrim. So for Halloween, you guys were able to go and explore and either decide to save or destroy the old vampires from Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind. Mm-hmm. And they have so much time because they produced, at this point, other than Grand Theft Auto 5, they produce one of the longest lasting products of our time, mm-hmm. where it's like, we don't necessarily need to give you Elder Scrolls 6 right now, because you guys are still playing Elder Scrolls 5
Even though I really wish they would release that damn game. And 100%, I re-downloaded Skyrim, mm-hmm. I think a few months ago. I was just feeling bored, and I want a game that I could play late at night, mm-hmm. because, you know, like, you know, back in the day, I could play FPS games at 2 or 3 a.m. and be fine, but nowadays I'm like, I have to wake up a little bit earlier for work. I want to feel a bit more relaxed and calm, even though Skyrim can get a little intense at times, but it's still something that, you know, isn't as high intensity. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, 100%. I mean, and I think as a community, we're not in a rush either. It's like we still enjoy playing it. Now I think, again, we all want the new Elder Scrolls, and we know it's coming out hopefully soon. But the irony is that game's outlasted some of their newer projects.
Yeah.
You know, I like Bethesda, but the Starfield. I literally so, because I know you played it, mm-hmm. and so I was like, okay, I'm gonna download it. I was on Game Pass. Literally got into maybe the first 5 minutes, and I turned it off. Like, I turned it off, and I was just like, it's too slow. Like, it wasn't letting me mm-hmm. actually play the game. It wanted to walk me through it. I'm like, listen, I'm a gamer. I've played plenty of games. You don't need to walk me through and make me, like, one of my biggest pet peeves in video games mm-hmm. is when they don't let you sprint. They force you to, like, walk for the first, you know, period of the game before you get into phase two or whatever. And yes, I turned it off real quick.
it was that old school style of when you hopped on a game, you skipped the tutorial. Like, you didn't really know how to play that game, but you say, I'm going to skip the tutorial.
You're going to figure it out. Yeah, you're going to figure it out. Like, it's more fun that way. Like, I don't want to build, I didn't ever really build Legos when I was a kid, but uh-huh. when I did that concept, I never looked at the damn sheet. I want to figure it out. I want to be creative. And I think that's a delicate balance that these developers need to also find, because there's a certain level between hand-holding and then also giving too much free reign. Mm-hmm. Like, you see, and it also depends on the type of gamer, right? Like, Elden Ring, for example,
yeah,
they are not hand-holding at all.
Not at all.
So, you know, and some gamers really enjoy that. Now, I don't have the time to necessarily do that on my day-to-day, because you really do have to invest, like, into learning the game. But you need to have that balance, especially for the everyday gamer that, you know, wants to enjoy themselves, but also wants to be creative, be able to customize their path. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's a lost art, honestly, yeah, nowadays.
It definitely is. We touched on it very briefly in our last episode. So there are certain games that used to be a game of the year. You knew if that developer was dropping this IP, it was going to be the game of the year that year. Recently, we've experienced Dragon Age: The Veilguard. So I've, for the most part, gave it all I got, and that's a little bit over 50 hours of gameplay. And Dragon Age, we knew. If Dragon Age dropped, it was game of the year. Origins 2, Inquisition, it was going to be game of the year. But now I can say with certainty that Dragon Age Veilguard is not going to be our game of the year.
Yeah.
And I feel like nowadays, and this is going to be a pretty touchy topic, where we're going to go ahead and dive into it, Dragon Age Veilguard, you probably haven't played it, but they were trying to do what we often see people nowadays in big corporations fail at, is try to push the woke initiative, where it's like, okay, you get somebody on your staff, you say, hey, you're a young guy, you're a young genius, let's have you write in the woke narrative. Like, we're going to make sure that we are now a game that is woke. And a lot of people have been talking about, there was a whole story log with one of the companions where the companion was having a gender identity crisis and wanted to find themselves, wanted to be non-binary, but try to find the route through it. And what we tend to forget, and I've seen a lot of people touch on this, especially people within our trans community, they said that they try to play a role and be woke, and it only embarrassed the community more. Mm-hmm. And we see that pretty often in games, where it's like, okay, this is what the kids want. But then you realize that when you think that way and try to say this is what people want without actually asking the people, you end up inadvertently making a fool of not only them, but yourself as well. And that's where we see Dragon Age of Veilguard tanking.
Yeah, I mean, and it's again, it's one of those things where, yes, folks want representation, and rightfully so. But again, you have to really be connected to that community to understand what representation looks like to them, because it's not the same across all identities. And if they feel like it isn't genuine, that's a lot of times the first issue of like, okay, you're not being genuine with this. You're making a play. You're playing on identity politics. But you really have to make that connection. And sometimes it isn't going, and I won't speak for that community because I'm not part of it, but for on the behalf of the Latino community, for example, it's like sometimes it is about just being seen, and you can continue to do what you would have done otherwise, but having that representation, I think even like when we look at like the skin culture, for example, like on the video game spaces, you know, you look at Fortnite, you look at Call of Duty, et cetera, et cetera. I know I always tend to go towards the characters or the skins that I feel like are closer to my identity, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, that's an example of there isn't a storyline attached to those characters all the time and most of the time, but it is about being able to just play as someone who does represent you. And I think we saw Baldur's Gate, for example, right? How you can create your own customize your own character to fit your identity. It can be non-binary. It can be gender fluid. And that, for me, is a little closer to what I look for from game developers, because at the end of the day, they're likely not investing in the actual community themselves.
Yes.
So you shouldn't be benefiting off of them through the story, through the selling of your IP. And a lot of times you're going to miss the mark.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, again, you can't be upset at the community for not fully embracing that story.
Yep.
And so if you're going to take that risk, you also be ready to for it not to be received as you're expecting it to.
Exactly. And I feel like you mentioned Baldur's Gate. Larian Studios did a pretty good job, especially with that, because the options were there, but the greater story and how you, basically your journey and how you depict yourself is all your experience to the game. It's how you play the game. It's how you say, okay, this is who I am. And then your character story unfolds from your decisions that you make within the game. And that's why Larian Studios was so successful with that game, and one of the most awards anybody has ever seen a game get And then they disappeared off into obscurity and said, all right, guys, we just gave you a diamond, and we'll see you guys when our next project. Because they tend to, Larian Studios is really good at taking their time, mm-hmm. and they don't ever blame the consumers. They, if anything, they take the most feedback from the consumers and say, okay, we're going to throw it in the game. It may take us some months, it may take us some years, but we'll give it to you. And by the time you get that product, it's a wonderful product.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the game industry can take a lot of lessons from, and they have, good or bad, from the movie industry, right?
Yep.
And you see certain studios in the movie industry that want to push out products consistently, mm-hmm. And their production level and costs is very high. They get the big names. They make sure that, you know, people hear about it. Their marketing numbers are ridiculous. But again, it means that you have to produce consistently and at a high rate, mm-hmm. which sometimes just isn't realistic. You know, folks are upset about sequels and movies being like sequels. The third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and trilogy, like, mm-hmm. and series is ridiculous. But at the end of the day, these big movie studios know you're going to go out and see it.
Yes, they do.
And they don't. They know that the feedback might not be great, but they'll get 60% Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. and they're going to get their money back.
Yeah.
And the reality is, with some of these gaming companies and developers, they don't know if they're going to get their money back all the mm-hmm. time, because it is a less predictable industry, I feel like, because it is all about the marketing timing. Going back to Assassin's Creed Shadows, they pushed their release date because of a couple different reasons, I think. But the timing just wasn't right, and at least in their opinion. But it's just about some of these developers not pushing out product consistently all the time is actually better. Like, less is more. because we actually want better games that last longer, that we can replay, that have levels to them from the multiplayer to single player campaigns, and really give you options to make it a story of your own, especially in games or RPGs that are not necessarily the multiplayer heavy games. Mm-hmm. And I would love for co-op to come back into the picture, mm-hmm. Because I think that is something that folks are missing and reminiscing about, mm-hmm. is that experience of being on a couch with your friend growing up in the basement, and you are in a world of your own, uh-huh. but you're playing with a friend. And I think that's a level of the depth that's also missing. And I hope that, you know, again, if developers and the industry starts listening more to the communities and the consumers within the gaming industry, I think they can really start to solve a lot of the issues that they're facing.
And this is a good segue into our next topic, as we're getting at time. And we don't want to conclude without mentioning, of course, and going on to why we're actually here. So we're here at Afrotech.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, this is for a lot of people that don't know what Afrotech is, this is one of the biggest conferences. We say Afrotech, but it's one of the biggest conferences for technology just in general.
Yep, yep.
And it allows a lot of young professionals who are now going into the tech industry, which here is in the United States is becoming one of our biggest and most developed and most growing industries. Mm-hmm. So while we're here, what is some of the things that you look forward to from all these developers, all these companies? And of course, we got Google, we got NVIDIA, we got SpaceX, we got a lot of companies that are here right now showing people what they have in store and wanting to bring people on their team. What are some of your expectations while we're here this week?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, expectations this week and in the future. I think investment into these communities, into our communities, mm-hmm. is crucial. Again, when you have that buy-in, it, one, gives you a little bit more leeway, and gives you a little bit more credit. We have companies, you mentioned the big ones. The other big ones are here. I mean, you got Pokemon and Roblox here. Mm-hmm. Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Companies that in the past wouldn't have even thought to come to a conference that is primarily for black folks, brown folks, immigrant communities. There's a huge immigrant community, mm-hmm. that's here, represented at Afrotech. Obviously from the African community, but also others as well, from around the world. So I really hope that they are starting to put money where their mouth is, essentially.
Yes.
And invest. And that looks like a lot of different things. It looks like professional development, mm-hmm. Offering internships. We went to the expo hall.
Yes, we did.
It is 95% internships, mm-hmm. job opportunities, really connecting with the people and figuring out where do they fit into their mm-hmm. team. Because these are huge corporations. Pokemon is a brand that, I mean, it goes from one corner of the world to another, mm-hmm. and has levels of it, from games to trade to car games, to being an entertainment brand, mm-hmm. in itself. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that investment goes. I'm also I mean, when it comes to development, right? Like, that was one thing. Roblox had a reception last night, and it's primarily geared towards engineers and game developers, and getting them on their teams, because I think we're, especially when as VR and virtual reality starts becoming a bigger thing, I think Roblox will be one of the pioneers in that space as we see it come more to fruition. Really giving them opportunities to express themselves, because I think that's also, again, we go back to the movie industry and versus the gaming industry, we gotta be willing to take risks. And reality is that if you don't take risks, you're just continuing on the same storylines, the same ideas, ideals that you did 30 years ago, and you're not gonna keep up if you stay in that lane.
It doesn't work. And we were able to ourselves speak to a bunch of different people and a bunch of students. We got people from schools, big names, MIT, John Hopkins. We got people here from Howard. We got people here from UPenn. We got some people that are just here just to absorb everything. And it's not only the students, it's the corporate executives. It's the people that are looking to not only develop young individuals, but to also develop their future replacements.
I
feel as though the way that technology is progressing, and we've seen the handoffs. It was our grandparents who didn't really know too much about technology, eventually handed off to our parents who, in their time and age, were like, we just got the smartphone. We just got the smartphone. And now we see that age group who are now these execs that remember the advent of the smartphone, and now they're here. Like, you, for all intents and purposes, it's crazy because we're at an age now where we were in high school, and even when we were in college, because this didn't come out until our senior year of college, where AI's a thing. ChatGPT's a thing. Kids can literally do their homework with ChatGPT. And I've even seen AI completely shrunk down to a pen where you just highlight words on paper, it scans the words, and it tells you basically how to write a sentence or translate a sentence for you. It's getting to a point where it's like, hey, now we're seeing it, so the people in their mid-20s, early 30s are looking at it like, are we keeping up?
Yeah, well, it's becoming more accessible. Like, and to my third point of what I'm looking forward to is just this technology and education becoming more accessible. You mentioned the students that we met. I mean, shout out to the National Gym Consortium. We went to their reception last night as well. They brought over 100 students, fellows, faculty from some of the top universities around the country that are doing research in STEM. Yeah. And as entities like that continue to grow, as more members of our communities and young people get access to these large institutions and have opportunities to do research and develop across the country at these big spaces, we're going to get better products. Whether it's AI, whether it's consoles, I think the gaming console is going to become irrelevant in 10 to 15 years because technology is going to keep going up. People are going to be using PCs and handheld devices again. I look forward to the time when the Nintendo DS, Game Boy era returns in a whole different light. I look forward to that level of access, because I know with AI, AI's been around, but it hasn't been to the last couple of years that's actually become accessible and to the public eye. And has developed to a point where we have to worry about regulation, and we have to worry about how companies are instituting private policies and privacy policies and data policies into their technology, which again takes education around what that means for folks. It's exciting, and we should be investing in what this looks like over the next couple years.
Most definitely. So by the time you guys get this episode, we would have already completed our 2024 AfroTech journey. So be sure to go onto our socials. So that's going to be Village Esports. That's Ville. Don't put regular Village. There's Bill. So go ahead and put that in your Instagram. And then, of course, we're going to be posting a lot of content from this week. So be sure that you're following that. Go ahead and check out our YouTube at Village ENE. And also, we just recently launched our merchandise.
Shout out to the store, man.
Shout out to the store. You can find us anywhere. Like, there's no more being incognito. You put Village ENE or Village Esports into Google, it's going to pop up our merchandise site. So no more excuses. So if you guys want to go ahead and cop that Village gear, remember, remember our colors, that light blue and that white. So if you see it, you like it, go ahead and buy it, help out the channel. And of course, you're gonna find this on our RSS site. So when you go in there and click on our website, it's gonna take you to our actual site where you can go in there and it has all the links available. And you can also drop us a donation on our PayPal or Patreon. So let us know. And of course, I'm Tay.
I'm David, man.
Alrighty, let's go.
Appreciate y'all.